So it does give us a reasonable amount of time for some news items that we can go through and have a look at the recent news. Certainly, I've clipped quite a number of items from the paper literally today, several of them anyway. But this particular one, bacteria in food may cause the rise in superbugs. This is coming from Thursday, and it mentions here, it says the food could be contributing to the rise of antibiotic-resistant infections caused by the superbugs, according to studies released yesterday. Antibiotic resistance is a global problem, with Britain particularly hard hit, as organisms such as methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus, MRSA in other words, becomes an ever less susceptible to drugs. Harmless and even beneficial bacteria in food may also be carrying genes that, when ingested, could transmit resistance to disease-causing bacteria, say researchers. So in other words, the viruses, they're not exactly life, as not life, but not as we know it, quoting from a Star Trek. But really, they're more like a crystal. They're like a crystal, a very complicated crystal. It needs an organism, something that is true life, with DNA, in order to reproduce, because it's just simply RNA in a virus. And it seems as if these crystals, if they come in contact with each other, can actually transfer some of their genes between one another, these viruses, which obviously means that it's quite unknown. You have some problems. You do some research on some mice or something like this. You start putting human genes into these research animals, and you're likely to come across, who knows what the combinations are going to be. This is the real problem. We've got all kinds of other areas as well that are causing problems. Contraceptive pill pollution apparently causes a crash in fish numbers. This is coming from Tuesday this week. It says traces of synthetic female hormones from the contraceptive pill present in rivers can devastate wild fish populations, according to a first study of its kind. Well, we'd heard about this, about fish actually changing gender, in other words, the males becoming females. It says it suggests that the impact of a cocktail of estrogens, most notably from the pill, on aquatic life, and perhaps humans, could be more far-reaching than previously thought. Now, it's interesting that they mention "and on humans," because we're all drinking water. And if there's somebody discharging the sewage, treated sewage, on the source, and it comes down the river, and it's then extracted and we then drink the water, the estrogens from the pill that have been consumed further upstream is coming down, and children, particularly male children, boys, can be affected by this. And you add to that certain other things that are actually taking place, and you say, well, how is it is all actually coming together? If you remember, I have mentioned before that when our first baptizing tour into the Indian subcontinent, I don't know whether Charlie remembers this, but when Mr. McNair actually came back, he used to be continually talking about this baptizing tour. And he mentioned at that time, and I think particularly remember in talking about him being in contact with a demon-possessed man who came up to him and said, look, we are going to the West. We are going into your side. And quite frankly, at that time, it seems as if every restraint came off. What actually happened was that the Beatles started going to the Maharishi for their advice, and all this Eastern influence started coming across into the Western world. There's an article that appeared here. This is in Friday's, May the 25th, so just yesterday. It says, the hippie ideals that outlasted the 1960s. It says, the 1960s were not, it appears, just a passing phase. A study to mark the 40th anniversary of the Summer of Love shows that the hippie ethos has moulded our view on everything from war, government, sex, fashion, food and the environment. That was a defining, the 60s were a defining moment, because what they basically came up with was God is dead. The pill suddenly came into the fore, so that you could therefore have a sexual revolution. And they, throughout the Bible and throughout the influence, and the leaders today now are the, if you like, the children of the 60s. Like my wife and myself, now in our 50s, and people in their 60s, that have lived through the 60s revolution that took place. It says, One in 10 has taken part in anti-war protests. Over a third think there's never any excuse for war. Just under a third disagree with party politics, much like hippies who were largely against the party system and preferred to focus on single issues like the environment. The idea of free love has also become mainstream, with 75% agreeing with sex before marriage. 75% agree with sex before marriage. And one in 10 saying they would have multiple sexual partners. More than a third said they'd taken marijuana, while 43% said they were open to meditation, and 25% believe in astrology. So 43% said that they're open to meditation. So this is where these ideas and so on are coming from. And what we then see is we see certain things that are taking place within society. And let's just turn over to Jeremiah chapter 2. Jeremiah chapter 2. I read this not that long ago, but I think it's worth reading it again, because it certainly applies to our society that we find today, where it says in verse 11, he says, "Has a nation changed their gods, which are yet no gods, but my people have changed their glory for that which does not profit? Be astonished, O heavens, at this. Be horribly afraid. You be very desolate, says the Eternal," because he made all this. He made all the evidence that we see. I mean, I'm looking at some spectacular flowers there on the window ledge over there, and the flowers here, and the beautiful countryside outside. He says, "For my people have committed two evils. They've forsaken me, the fountain of living waters." This is where the knowledge, spiritual knowledge, comes from. "And they've hewn them out cisterns, broken cisterns that can hold no water." There's no spiritual knowledge that they can have. There's no means of actually guiding society in spiritual dimensions. And let's face it, if you compare, one thing that you, an ordinary human being should be able to compare this. If you look at the difference between the highest ape or chimp and humans, the productive effort, the productive evidence, if you like, the things that humans can do and the things that a chimp can do, and you'd look at the difference between those two, it's about as great a difference as between a chimp and a bacteria. It is about the same. They are so vastly different. Humans have a dimension which is totally different from animals. We are not animals. There is a spiritual dimension to us, but that has been thrown out. And what's actually happened is that we have this no hold barred, we can go ahead and do whatever we want kind of society. In this last Thursday's paper, it mentioned, there's a little article just tucked inside, it wasn't even a main headline in any form, and it says, "Meet Britain's first sex change mayor." And I want you to listen very carefully to this. It says, "Two women who were born men became the first transgender mayor and mayoress in Britain." Now, did you hear what I said? Two women who were both born men became the first transgender mayor and mayoress in Britain. Let me go and explain. Jenny Bailey, the mayor-elect of Cambridge and a Liberal Democrat councillor, met Jennifer Liddle, her business and civil partner, about 15 years ago, while both were having hormone therapy as they underwent sex change operations. So they both wanted to become women. They were both actually men before, and they met as they were going through this process, and then they basically are living together. And Miss Bailey, a 45-year-old who has had two children, said, "I managed to get through something that was quite difficult and came out of it a better person. I don't want to be eclipsed by being mayor. I'm so proud of Cambridge." And on it goes. As they say, you get rid of the fountains of living water and you get broken systems and you get chaos and you get confusion. And when you look at the crux of the era that started all of this, that actually threw away all the traces, that was the 60s. And it was just interesting that when you look at what actually happened within the church, when the first baptizing tour went into that eastern area, this was highlighted. And it was specifically highlighted that there was a spiritual influence that was moving west. And that's what took place. That spiritual influence has actually caused a certain mindset within our society, which is decadent. And it's from this decadent mindset, perverse mindset, that then you have, there is no God. That's the first thing, as Romans 1 brings out. It then goes into sexual decadency and sexual perversion. And from that, it goes into the educational system, as again Romans 1 brings out, and from there it is disseminated throughout society. And we are now looking at the dissemination, but the crux, the actual fulcrum, was the 60s. And we need to be aware that that, in fact, was the case. I'll give you another example. Here's one, another article that appeared back in, well, appeared today. Appeared, I think it's Saturday 26th, today. Sex psych addict sues after being fired. A man is suing IBM for $5 million, that's £2.5 million, in a wrongful dismissal case after he was fired for visiting adult internet chat rooms while at work. James Perkenza, I think it is, 58, said he is addicted to online chat rooms and IBM should have offered him treatment instead of firing him. The Vietnam War veteran said he has suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder since 1969 after seeing his best friend killed on a patrol, and he claimed that his use of internet to control his psychological problems. Now, that just the fact that this case could even come up and be taken seriously. Now, yeah, okay, there are many lawyers making an awful lot of money out of this. It's in the States that this is taking place. It's in New York, I believe it is. But the fact that anybody would seriously take this seriously in any way, again, you throw away the fountain of living water, so you get broken systems. And these broken systems come up with concepts like this. Because why? There's no right or wrong. There's no benchmark. There's no standard that is there. Another one, this is coming from Wednesday. This is from the Daily Mail. It says, children as young as 4 are being taught about same-sex relationships using puppets, plays, and fairy tales in a government-funded scheme. It emerged yesterday. So what you're looking at is you're looking at the 60 generation that gets into power, and what does it do with its twisted values, with its deviant ideas? It basically goes ahead and comes up with legislation like this, where it's a government-funded scheme to go ahead and teach children as young as 4 about homosexuality. Pupils are being invited to act the parts of gay characters during after-school art clubs, as well as in some literature and drama lessons. In one primary school, youngsters are put on puppet shows for the Cinderella story, featuring male Cinderellas. Other primaries are inviting in touring theatre companies, which stage plays featuring same-sex parents. And on it goes. Again, you get rid of the fountain of living waters, which builds a stable family unit, because that from that family unit, you have children. And children are the next generation. If the family unit is broken down, which we're looking at today, you only have to go back into history to see what happens. You have something which is barbarous that comes in and then wipes out the civilization. That is basically what happens. That's what you see, and that's what you find within history. Another one, animal-human embryos to be given the go-ahead. This is from Friday, this last Friday. It says, research into potential life-saving medical treatments using part human, part animal embryos is to be allowed after a rethink by ministers. Great. Remember what we just read about the fact that viruses can transmit parts of their DNA to one another. This is causing the MRSA and the superbug problems, as far as they can tell. And at the same time, what do? They start experimenting by combining the DNA between animals and humans, getting chimeras and various other forms involved. At the same time, right next to it, it says, the need for a father in IVF is to be axed. Single woman and lesbian couples will have greater access to IVF, fertilization treatment, under the proposed laws announced yesterday. Doctors at present have to take into account, quote, the need of the child for a father, unquote, when carrying out treatment. So in other words, there's got to be, before IVF can take place, the need of the child for a father is actually taken into account so that they can have access to the father. But under the draft Human Tissues and Embryology Bill, this requirement is scrapped. The move was welcomed by Ruth Yal, 41, a television executive from northwest London who had IVF treatment in a private clinic using sperm from her gay best friend. And on it goes. So in other words, you take and you put a child in a purely, a non-father home, a non-father-based home. And that, again, is not, it's throwing away the fountain of living waters. And you're actually, what you're actually doing then is you're replacing it with broken cisterns, which hold no water. There's no spiritual value there. There's no spiritual understanding. What was coming from the Spirit of God is gone. And what we're left with is a human mind that is influenced under the spirit of the power of the air, as it brings out over in Ephesians 2:2. And that spirit of the power of the air is an enemy. That's what the word Satan means. It means enemy. Shall I go into the rest of it? Well, I'll leave. We'll go on to another topic then. I'll leave the other ones I've got there. But when we're looking at agriculture, it is interesting. I clipped this from a paper some time ago, and I don't think I've actually got the date on it. I haven't got the date on it, but it was from Country Diary by W.F. Deeds. I don't think I've read it before. But it says, the shameful neglect of farming should be food for thought. It said, focusing on global warming and green issues makes us liable to overlook other trends, and one of them is the world's rapidly growing population outstripping its resources. Now remember, W.F. Deeds is an elderly gentleman. He's well into his 90s. He's seen a country which has gone through the war, and he understands he's actually been a correspondent during the war. He says, many countries, including this one, cannot grow enough food for their needs. It doesn't worry us because food is so easily transportable, much of it by air. But will it continue to be? Procuring food is going to get more competitive. Transport by air will conflict with measures to combat global warming. Meanwhile, our own self-sufficiency in food production falls steadily, and I do not think that that makes sense. From figures in my possession, I put our capacity to feed ourselves at about 65% and falling. It means that we are importing a third of our food, and given the rate of which farming is declining, it will soon be half. So the prospect, if there is a problem in the supply, is that we starve. They say, oh, we certainly go short of food. It says, we've been here before in this column, and we shall be here again. If I survive, I'm troubled by the attitude we now take towards agriculture. Farmers have been told, in effect, that their job is not to produce food, which under Europe's absurd arrangement is expensive, but to keep the land tidy for the pleasure of our expanding urban population. And that's the way farming is looked upon today in this country. Where's it coming from? It's coming from a government which is predominantly urban in its ideas. What has that government done? It's got rid of the House of Lords, which was predominantly rural in their ideas. So in other words, they can push through this kind of legislation until finally you have a country that cannot feed itself. And when the crunch does come, then what are they going to do? Where are they going to get the food from? It says they're being paid not to produce. And as long as we can buy fresh strawberries in the supermarkets all the year round, who cares? I concede that reform to the common agricultural policy that's in Europe is an essential step to any progress towards restoring our own farm industry, but not all the fault for this decline lies in Europe. To Labour, there is something alien about farming. It feels thoroughly at home on the floor of industry, uncomfortable where there's a plough at work. And as we saw at the time of the foot and mouth epidemic, and see wherever such threats loom, such crises leave Labour feeling inadequate. Moreover, farmers and smallholders form no part of the assured Labour vote, which is being slowly built up with people dependent on government for their jobs or benefit. And again, that is something that we need to be to understand that is taking place. Let's just turn over to Deuteronomy 28. Deuteronomy 28, and just notice something here. The idea that this current situation is going to go on indefinitely. Not only does it say in verse 16 that if we depart from God's laws, if we go ahead and get these broken cisterns that we've just had a look at, and depart from God's laws, cursed shall you be in the city and cursed shall you be in the field. But if you go on over to verse 52, well, it goes on, it says, it talks about another nation eating your food, but it says verse 52, and he shall besiege you. Well, let's have a look at it. In verse 51, well, let's go back another one. Verse 49, the Eternal shall bring a nation against you from afar, from the ends of the earth, as swift as the eagle flies, a nation whose tongue you will not understand. A nation of fierce countenance, which shall not regard the person of the old, nor show favour to the young. And he shall eat the fruit of your cattle, the fruit of your land, until you be destroyed. Which also he'll not leave you the corn, or the wine, or the oil, or the increase of your kind, or flocks, or your sheep, until he be destroyed you. And he shall besiege you in all your gates, until your high and fenced walls come down, in which you trusted, throughout all your land, and he'll besiege you in all your gates throughout all your land, which the Eternal your God has given you. Now we look at that and we say, oh, it's just applying in days gone by when they would all go into a siege, into a city, with big high walls, and put up the shutters, and there would therefore be in a siege mentality and the nation would come in. And yes, certainly that did apply, and that's what actually happened. But when we apply it to today, we see the similar kind of thing. That if there is a siege, if in other words, if the country itself is under siege, and if the food coming in is a problem, then you've got real problems, serious problems. I'm reading at the moment one of these short stories about the Enigma machine, and that really the importance of the Bletchley Park and the code breaking to this country was absolutely enormous. The amount of shipping that would be coming across the Atlantic, across into this country, and it was only because they could pick up the U-boat transmissions, and it was the only reason we were able to use those is because they had very prehistoric, looking from at this point, prehistoric computers that they actually used to break the codes, and they were only able to do that and do that in secrecy. But that actually helped this country to survive. But it's not only us as well. You're looking down in Australia, and here's another one from about a month ago. It says severe drought and global warming is forcing Australia to consider opening up one of the world's last untouched agricultural frontiers. Farmers in New South Wales, Victoria and South Australia face ruin as the once mighty Murray and Darling rivers are slowly being bled dry by thirsty crops and historically low rainfall. The tropical north, in contrast, promises torrential downpours. So in an echo of the country's 19th century pioneering spirit, a government task force is now studying the prospect of encouraging farmers to abandon the dry as dust south. And I've got dairy farmers in Victoria asking, when can we go? It's a case of go north, young man, said Senator Bill Heffernan, who is chairing the Million Study. But history carries some sober warnings. A few miles from the Northern Territory town of Humphrey Doo, an ambitious agricultural enterprise was begun in the 1950s, and it proved a disaster and was abandoned within a decade after magpie geese ate the rice seed, buffalo bulldozed the paddies, and seasonal rains proved erratic. So it's not the answer, but they're having to do something because their traditional area, the drought hit south, is being, it is drought hit and it's being destroyed. Another thing that is taking place, I think we've got plenty of time to go into it, is the fact that there are a group of non-Israelite values now which are actually holding sway. A lot of the concepts that are coming through are not coming from an Israelite basis. In other words, we see from the 60s, we see these alien ideas coming in from the East. And we've seen that, and that has forged certainly the leadership even that we've had today from the 60s revolution. But even recently, we've seen non-native families come in, and it has come to a point where this was coming from Monday's paper, where it says, give native families priority for social housing over migrants, say the minister, because there are so many migrants that are moving into Great Britain at this present time. My wife was saying that she was in a bookshop just this past week, was it? This past week, and there was a huge display of a translation, a book on translation, between a dictionary between Polish and English. And that is because there are so many coming from the eastern countries across into this area. He says, families that have come into this country have more, which come from this country, have more right to social housing than new migrants, a minister claimed yesterday. Margaret Hodge, who is at the Department of Trade and Industry, said that the legitimate sense of entitlement of poor settled families should override the needs of recent arrivals, and she called for a transparent point system that gave more weight to length of residence, citizenship, and national insurance contributions, and her comments reinforce a noticeable hardening in Labour's approach to immigration after years of operating almost an open-door policy. Now, that open-door policy, as I say, it has shaped the kind of country that we've had. This is coming from Wednesday's paper, and it says Labour has welcomed 1 million new citizens since 1997. Now, that's in a country that is, what, we're about 60-something million, 65 million. And it says, British citizenship has been granted to 1 million foreign nationals since Labour came to power in 1997, official figures showed yesterday. Now, notice what it says. British citizenship has been granted. Now, the one that I mentioned before, where people were coming in as migrant workers in many cases, and these are not citizens of the country, but just citizens alone. The actual ethnicity of the population is changing. We're no longer Ephraimite. Yeah, at least there is an Ephraimite. There is an Ephraimite core, and there's certainly that is there, or Israelite core. But there is this move, there is this trend toward a non-Ephraimite way, non-Israelite way. It says more than 150,000 obtained a passport in 2006, taking the total to around 1,020,000 since Tony Blair took office. About half of the new citizens were people who qualified through being resident in the country for 5 years or more, and 20% became British through marriage. The remainder were mainly dependent children. So the vast majority were ones that have actually come in, been here for a length of time, then applied. And this trend is up all the time, and you only have to go around in Carmarthen or in any major town, a major city, and you see this change in the mix of the people. The people that there are not, there's not the Britishness that is there, that there was in the, previously. If you notice it here in Deuteronomy 28, look in verse 15. It says, it shall come to pass that if you will not listen to the voice of the Eternal your God to observe to do all his commandments and his statutes which I command you this day, all these curses shall come upon you and shall overtake you. So these are the curses that it's mentioning. And one of them, if you notice down in verse 43, it says, the stranger that is within you shall get up above you very high, and you shall come down very low. He shall lend to you, and you shall not lend to him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. Now, again, you say lend. It's talking here about lending money. But there's also this concept that the ideas as well, the concepts, the things that are coming in from overseas are actually changing the concepts of society, and they are lending ideas to the society as well. And the ideas are also getting above the ideas that formed this country originally and formed America originally, and Canada and Australia and so on. And even the links across with Europe, we have ideas which are causing problems. This one is from Thursday. It says, Sarkozy's EU vision. Now, Sarkozy is the new president of France. Nicolas Sarkozy's vision spells trouble for Britain. It says, Nicolas Sarkozy has set France on a collision course with Britain over the future of the European constitution and Turkey's bid to join the EU. Now, basically what he's saying is Turkey should not be in part of the EU. Which you say, well, fine, but why? What's the concept behind that? Well, what is the EU? EU basically is a Catholic organization, and Turkey does not have a place within a Catholic organization. That's the concept. The new French president yesterday set out his vision for a simplified treaty to replace the constitution, which was rejected by the French and Dutch voters 2 years ago. Tony Blair had hoped that Mr. Sarkozy would join Britain in blocking proposals to remove the national veto on a number of issues in next month's EU summit. And it's he wanted to make sure that the veto stayed, but Mr. Sarkozy has made it clear that for Paris, quote, simplification, unquote, does not mean ditching sweeping new EU decision-making powers or rules allowing federalist countries to press ahead with closer political union. So again, ideas are there, and ideas are forging what we see within Europe in a certain direction, and it's going in the same direction that it has always gone, it seems. And that is, really, when you look at it, a creeping fascism. Now, let's just have a look, before we close, let's have a look at just a few of these areas. Again, the ideas where we've thrown away the fountains of living water and have actually got hold of now these broken systems, these other ideas, alien ideas, ideas from outside an Israelite mind. Here we find CCTV creating Orwellian society, says police chief. This is coming from Monday's paper. Another senior police officer yesterday joined the growing clamour against the proliferation of CCTV cameras around the country. Ian Redhead, the deputy chief constable of Hampshire, said Britain risked moving towards an Orwellian society while also calling for a review of speed cameras and the policy to retain DNA. He questioned the need on BBC One's The Politics Show for CCTV in villages with low crime levels. Now, some people can see that, but when you look at the mounting evidence, and let me just go through some of these areas of evidence. Before we do that, let's just briefly read Daniel chapter 7, remind ourselves what we're talking about over in Daniel chapter 7. Here in Daniel chapter 7, we find what is prophesied within Europe, and what the type of rulership that is prophesied for this Roman system. And here in Daniel chapter 7, notice verse 7, it says, "And after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful, terrible, strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. And it devoured and broke in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up amongst them a little horn, before whom there were three first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things." And if we skip down to verse 23, it says, "Then he said, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on the earth, which shall be different from all kingdoms, and will devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down and break it in pieces." Now notice the way in which it does it. Here is a system, a beast, a political system, that, as it says here, it will devour the whole earth, tread it down, break it in pieces. It is fascist in its basic thinking. The fascist is where the system comes first. The system is above the people. It's not rulership for the people by the people. It is the system comes first. And therefore, the imposition of whatever is needed is what is more important. To give you an idea, the direction that we find things moving, it says, "Police spy in the sky fuels Big Brother fears." It says, "The country's first police drone took to the skies yesterday, opening a new era of flying CCTV cameras and adding to concerns about the extent of Britain's surveillance society." That was from Tuesday's paper. Another one, "Head cams for traffic wardens. Traffic wardens are to be given head-mounted video cameras in the latest high-tech weapon in the war against illegal parking." That was Thursday's paper. "Drivers set to face the speed camera that doesn't flash." A speed camera that does not flash and requires no film is being tested. It was revealed yesterday. The camera can photograph drivers' faces as well as their number plates, and if approved by the Home Office, the cameras could be used nationwide. That was from Saturday. That's today's paper. Google questioned over Big Brother database. Google has been asked by the European Union's privacy watchdog to explain why it stores personal information for 2 years amid fears that the search engine giant could become an internet Big Brother. Richard Thomas, British Information Commissioner, has teamed up with European colleagues to ask Google why so much data is stored and why it's kept for so long. So you go onto Google, you put in a search into the search engine, and that information is stored. And who knows who can actually access it in who knows how many years down the line. Another one. DNA file of 100,000 innocent children. Labour was accused last night of turning a generation of innocent youngsters into crime suspects by including their details on a national DNA database by stealth. And that was on... What date was that? That was Wednesday's paper. Microchips in dustbins spy on 3 million homes. That paper is... If I have to open it up. Thursday's paper. It's everywhere. It's fascism. It is a control by the state, by the authorities, over people. It is not freedom. It's not the kind of thing that you find in the American Constitution or in the Magna Carta, where the and various other legislation that has been grown for thousands of years. It just isn't there. And it does fit what you find here in Daniel 7 about the nature of this power that is going to finally come into the fore. Now, how it'll come into the fore, what will be the trigger, we don't know. With many, many areas that we can look at, finance and various other areas as well. But rest assured, it will certainly, it'll come into the fore, and we need to keep an eye on the news, because we can see the type of institution it is going to be. And we can also see the kind of things that we find within our newspapers today that fit that mould. And as I say, that was just from this last week. That was just 1 week.